Right, today we'd like to talk about the mind and the act of loving kindness and compassion. Now, so first let's talk about the mind of loving kindness and compassion. Now, what is loving kindness? We use the word loving kindness a lot, well, especially in Buddhism. Yes, very good. A feeling of goodwill for others. So the mind of loving kindness, that we always wish other well and happy. So maybe we should ask ourselves, do we always have this goodwill in ourselves? We may not have the mind of harming others, but how strong is our will in wishing other well and happy? Whenever you see your friends in the lecture hall early in the morning, do you have this thought that I wish you well and happy? Maybe you say, where is your lecture notes? and talking about some other issue. But this, do we have this mind that whoever we see, we give them a smiling face, and always deep in our heart, whoever we see, whoever we encounter, we wish them well and happy? Not really. Yeah, but we use the word loving kindness a lot, to be kind. We tend to ask people to be kind to us. And how much is this, how much do we have in ourselves wishing other well? So that's loving kindness. And this is in fact a very important practice in Buddhism. Because we know that, well, I suppose this is coming to the end of first semester. You probably have gone through many talks, or if you have been attending the talks for this semester. How many of you are first time here? No one? No one is first time here? Well, we know that we all like to be happy. In fact, we all like to be well and happy. Other people like to be well and happy as well. And we also know that the cause of suffering, the cause of our unhappiness, why do we sometimes get very frustrated, very angry? Because of our own greed, our desire not fulfilled, someone is saying something that we feel offended, we get angry, we get very upset, and also we can't understand things, how things happen. All this can cause us frustration. So we say the cause of suffering comes from our ignorance, our greed, our hatred that cause us suffering. So while we say we want to wish other well and happy, you'll find that not only that wishing other well and happy is good for others, it's good for yourself as well. Because if you're able to always wish other well and happy, your mind is more gentle. At least we are tuning our mind towards the gentle and the cheerful and the positive side, rather than having an angry face, a mind that's full of grouch, whoever is we see, angry with this person, and I do not like this person. So when you have this mind, some people have a lot of anger and hatred in themselves, and that's why at the end you find that they have anger management problem. And they need to go and see a psychiatrist. But in fact, this is, well, are we born as such? Maybe some people are born with stronger afflictions as such. Some comes through our upbringing, or because we seldom try to control our anger. We allow our ego to grow. Anything that doesn't go according to our will, we get angry. We never reflect. Is it right for me to be angry? And that's why with the mind of loving kindness and compassion, when we wish other well, then at least we have to tell ourselves, do not allow our action, our behavior, to bring harm to others. Alright? So this is just an introduction to loving kindness. What about compassion? What's the meaning of compassion? Is there a difference between loving kindness and compassion?
Wishing everyone to be free from suffering.
Free from suffering? Okay. So compassion is more with a stronger sympathy, that someone is in difficulties, is in suffering, we hope that they can be relieved from suffering. Whereas loving kindness is like you wish other well, not necessarily that that person is in suffering. That's slight different here. So compassion is, we can say that it's a great sense of sympathy that try to relieve others from suffering. So again, we have to ask ourselves, do we always have this wish that other people can be free from suffering? When we see that other people are not well, other people are in difficulties, other people are in poverty, do we have this compassion in trying to help others to be free from suffering? How strong is our compassion? And if we don't have much of this loving kindness and compassion, that means we don't relate with people around us that much. We tend to think of what I like and what we want, how we feel, rather than sharing the feelings of others. So you can see that loving kindness, while we say the mind of an act of loving kindness and compassion, a lot of time we think of, oh, we need to cultivate loving kindness and compassion so that we help others. But in fact, before you can help others, before you can develop a good sense of loving kindness and compassion, you need to make sure that you reflect yourself and reduce your own selfishness and self-centeredness before your loving kindness and compassion can develop further. And so loving kindness and compassion is in fact a way of practice. It helps us to reduce our anger, hatred, and self-centeredness. And in fact, loving kindness and compassion, without loving kindness and compassion, we probably wouldn't have Buddhism today. Well, a lot of people say, oh, Buddhism talk about loving kindness and compassion. And that's why if someone wants to ask you for a favor, oh, you're a Buddhist, please be compassionate to me. But that is just a very superficial way of saying, where they may not really understand why Buddhism talks so much on loving kindness and compassion. Now, in fact, without loving kindness and compassion, as we say, we wouldn't have Buddhism today. Because if we look at an example of the Buddha, the Buddha was born as a prince. He has very, very comfortable life in the palace. He has a very happy life. If he didn't share the feelings of others, he probably wouldn't go for renunciation. Why did he go for renunciation? Not because he himself was in great suffering. It was because he saw other creatures, other people are in suffering. So there are a few incidents. First incident was that when he went to a harvest festival with his father, when he was young, he saw how the farmer plowed the field and whipped the buffalo. The buffalo dug, loosened the soil, dug out the, and there were earthworms. And the bird flew down to eat the earthworms. A bigger bird flew down to eat the small bird. So when he was looking at this, he felt painful for the buffalo. Why must the human being, why did the farmer has a right to whip the buffalo? The buffalo like to be happy. Of course the farmer like to be happy as well, because the farmer is poor and the farmer wants the buffalo to work so that he have better harvest, better money, so he can have a better life. So the farmer wants to be happy, but the buffalo likes to be happy as well. The earthworms like to be happy. The little birds like to be happy. The eagle like to be happy too. Everyone likes to be happy. But why do we impose suffering on one another when we try to create our own happiness? And that made him think that why are we living in a world as such? Everyone likes to be happy. If I ask all of you, do you like to be happy? Of course, everyone's going to tell me that you like to be happy. Anyone here less like to have suffering? So everyone likes to be happy. So since everyone likes to be happy, so why do we want to impose unhappiness onto others? And that makes him think a lot. The common wish for everyone is to be happy. And if you look at the world that we're living in today, it's full of chaos, fighting, violence. You got fighting among people, in the family, in the community, among countries. A lot of fight. Because we all like to be happy. So therefore we fight. Is that right? Because everyone thinks that if I win, if I conquer more places, I'll be happy. So they want to be happy, so they fight. But is it the right way to gain happiness? You're creating suffering onto others. So that's why the prince, he was very young at that time. He shared the feelings of these creatures who were fighting with, who were having a lot of who were killing each other, and have a very heavy heart himself, and feel, why is it as such? Can't we live happily and peacefully? And in fact, this is the problem. This was the problem during Buddha's time. It's still the problem up to today. Not only the animal world is as such, the fittest survive. The human world is the same. And so that made him think, and he wants to understand why. And this shows his great compassion. Because he was having a very comfortable life. But it was his great sense of sympathy towards these living creatures that he can share the feelings of this farmer, share the feelings of the buffalo, share the feelings of the earthworms, understand that everyone likes to be happy and peaceful. So that is the great compassion. And it was because of this great compassion that he started to think and wants to find out more about meaning of life and how to create a life which is really peaceful and happy for everyone. So that was the first incident. The second incident, so as he grew older, he requested his father to allow him to visit the country. Because he was a very thoughtful prince, his father was very worried about him, because when he was young, he was born, there were predictions that he will either become a great king, or the greatest, the king among the kings, the greatest king, or he will be, if he decided to understand more about life, he will probably leave the palace in search of the truth and will become a Buddha, the enlightened one. So his father, of course, wants him to continue with his throne and do not want him to become a monk and become a Buddha. And so his father was very protective all the time, trying to make sure that he see good things all the time, he see beautiful things all the time, don't think about life, and try to fulfill his wish. And that's why he has very, very comfortable life in the palace. So so his father even built 3 palaces for him so that he can rotate from raining season to summer to winter. So he got 3 palaces, 3 castles to play around for the year. So living in the palace, rotating around the 3 castles, very enjoyable, right? But the prince feel that he still wants to know more about life. And if you're living in a castle, like if you like to go to Disneyland, if I say you live in Disneyland, or if you're just going there as a tourist, you probably want to have a lot of fun playing this and playing that. But I say make that as a home and stay there. You can play all the games in there. How long do you want to stay there? Probably a year will be too much. will be a bit too much, right? See, we all like to have fun and games, but you find that if you are given that for a long time, you do not want it anymore as well. And that's why sometimes we tell the parents, if the kids like to watch TV or play games, just tell them to keep playing, don't stop. Cannot stop, just keep playing. Since you like it so much, you do not need to eat, do not need to take shower, it just play, keep playing. Just encourage them to keep playing and non-stop and see how long they can last. When they stop, you say, continue playing. At the end, they probably want to stop themselves. So we get bored. So sometimes we get carried away by our desire. We did not realize that this desire is temporary as well. And so he lived in a castle probably for a few years, and he started to get bored. And he wants to request that he wants to visit the country. So when he visited the country, he saw a few incidents. First, he saw an old man, the old beggar, walking with a stick, wrinkled face, gray hair, no teeth, had his body walking. And so he felt sad seeing that. His followers say, every one of us will become old one day. So, like all of you, young and healthy. If you look at some grandma and grandpa, they can't walk properly, they can't run like you, they got no teeth to eat some of the things, and eyesight's not good, aching here and there. Did you realize that one day we'll be like that too? So you probably say, don't want to think about it now. But the prince feel that, okay, we all is going to be like this one day. Why is life as such? Is there a way to overcome this? We all feel frustrated confronting old age. So he didn't have an answer. Second time he went out, he saw a sick man. So again, sometimes we fall sick, we recover. So some of you are coughing, having flu, and then you recover, and then it comes again. You recover, it comes again. Sometimes you got more serious illness, you don't recover, or it's more painful. We can't stay healthy all the time. Or I think for all of you, because the time that you are healthy more, and that's why you are enjoying your life. But for old people, like sometimes when they wake up, oh, today I feel energetic, oh, that's good, at least today is a good day. But out of the 365 days, a lot of days when you wake up, you feel aching here and there, arthritis, and feeling not well. So there are only a few days that you feel good. So sickness is actually a kind of suffering. And then third time he went out, he saw some people carrying on a plank a dead person. So the followers say, this person died, he's leaving this world forever. So he saw this few incidents. He thought, we all like to be happy. Why are we having a life as such? Killing each other, fighting with one another for our happiness? And then we all, no matter how you fight, how you struggle to get the highest status in the society, get the most money that you have, we all can't avoid old age, sickness and death. You can see we have in the society a lot of millionaires, billionaires, with a lot of money in the bank. When they come to old age, everyone is the same. And sometimes even before they die, they become dementia, and then and they can't even think properly how to manage their wealth. And then the successor start to fight for the wealth, go to a court case, and a lot of fighting within the family, siblings fight with one another for the heritage. So what is the point that you work so hard, you earn so much money, and got so high in your status in the society, and at the end, you can't carry anything with you, and then left behind all these things for other people to continue fighting? Is it the life that we want? Is there better meaning than this? Otherwise, are we born in this world, fight, and fight for whatever we want, and then old age, sickness, and death? It sounds very sad. And that's why the prince, he has this strong compassion that he shared the feelings of others. He was not at old age, he was like all of you, young and healthy at that time. But he shared the feelings of the old beggar, he shared the feelings of the sick person, he shared the feelings of those who have people who pass away. And he thought, why is life as such? Can we make our life more meaningful? Is there more meaning, or can our life be more significant than just passing by our life as such? And that's why, out of great compassion, because he realized that this is not only the problem that he is going to face himself, his family member is going to face sooner or later, and it is a problem that all sentient beings facing, everyone face. And that's why he hopes that he can find an answer to solve the problem, to come back to help everyone. So it's again, out of great compassion, he decided to leave the palace in search of the truth. So you can see that it was still, again, the compassion that played a very important role. Because if he didn't share the feelings, he wouldn't leave the palace. Who cares? I have a happy life now. I'm healthy at the moment. Who cares, right? So, but it was because of his compassion and his wish for others to be well, to be happy, that he left the palace. So he left the palace in search of the truth. Finally, he realized the truth. So after he realized the truth, he tried to share the teachings. So, of course, they were saying that when he attained enlightenment under the Bodhi tree, he didn't actually teach immediately. He had some hesitation on how should he teach or whether he should teach. So sometimes people have a question, say, well, the Buddha left the palace out of his great compassion, but after he attained enlightenment, why did he not teach immediately, and he start to have hesitation whether he should teach or not? Have you come across this part of the Buddha story?
Yeah. I think he categorizes people into four states, like the one that actually can understand his teaching.
Yeah.
And one that cannot at all, and
yeah.
You can't hesitate that there are a lot of people that cannot actually understand his teaching. So
Yeah. So he was hesitating because he knows that the teaching is so profound. If you want to teach, if you want to say about the ultimate truth, it is very profound. And not everyone can understand or penetrate that truth. So he was hesitating because he thought, if I say this, how many percent of the sentient beings can understand? And if the majority cannot understand, and the worst is if they start to defame the teaching. Say, who is this silly person talking about this? And start to criticize a noble person, a person who is enlightened. And because of their own ignorance, ignorance that they can't understand the teaching, they start to defame the teaching. They're actually going to create unwholesome speech that's going to obstruct their own self, and it's going to create unwholesome karma for themselves. So the Buddha was thinking, if I didn't say anything, at least they wouldn't defame me, and they wouldn't create such a severe unwholesome karma, because defaming a noble person or a Buddha is a very strong unwholesome karma. And so he thought, if I don't say anything, then they wouldn't say anything. They would just continue with whatever they are doing, at least they won't add, it won't add on their suffering. But if I say something and they don't understand and they start to defame me, it's going to bring them more suffering. My intention to teach is to bring happiness to others. If after teaching, the sentient beings has more suffering, then should or should I teach? And that was his hesitation. So you can see that his hesitation still come from his compassion. What is the best? So it's still a compassion to the sentient being, so that so as to minimize their suffering. All right? So of course at that, so you have hesitation, but then at that time the heavenly king came and request the Buddha to turn the Dharma wheel. So the Buddha continued to think carefully, and finally he decided to teach his teaching according to the acceptance levels of the people, rather than start with something very, very profound. So that's why he start with the Four Noble Truths, which talk about suffering, which talk about life, there are imperfection in life. Do you understand that there are imperfection in life? And everyone says, oh yeah, there are imperfection in life, there are things that doesn't go according to our will, we get frustrated from time to time. Then the Buddha say, do you know why you get frustrated? Our frustration, the Buddha then say, do you realize that the frustration actually come from our soul? You see, an incident happened. If a person can confront the incident with a more, say for example, someone commented something, some people take it very easily. Oh, thank you for your comments. Oh, I know how to improve myself now. No suffering. But if someone commented about you, you get very angry. It's the same comments. Some people get very angry. Some people feel very happy. Oh, luckily you pointed out my error. Oh, so thank you so much. And I now know how to improve myself. And the other party will get very angry because why do you pick on my error? You are always picking on me. You're always criticizing me. You're looking down on me. Then you get very, very angry. You see, the comments was same comments. But a person can be angry. A person is not angry. So was that comment the problem? Was that comment the cause of the problem? Is how we respond to the comment. So the Buddha then tell them, the cause of suffering come from ourselves. We are overprotective about ourselves. We are very self-defensive. And because of our self-defensiveness, we always want more for ourselves. We want ourselves to be better than the others. We feel jealous when other people are better than us. We feel upset when our view was not accepted. We get angry when other people are doing things which doesn't go according to our will. But if you think about it, is it necessary? Or are you sure that you're always right? So the Buddha then analyzed with them the Four Noble Truths. You have talked about the Four Noble Truths before, right? The Buddha start with talking about suffering and what are the causes of suffering. That is our ignorance about ourselves, about the external phenomena, and our endless desire that cause suffering. And then the Buddha say, this suffering can be ended. You see, I have ended this suffering by eliminating these causes of suffering. Eliminating my greed, hatred, ignorance, and even attachment to myself. And realize the truth. And so therefore, he proved that it can be ended. And then he tell them the way to practice. So it is by systematically teach according to the acceptance levels of the people that the Buddha decided this is how he's going to teach, so that people can learn from the level they are in. And that also shows the great compassion of the Buddha, that he tried to put himself, he's an enlightened one, he tried to put himself in our shoes, that this ordinary person who still have so much attachment and ignorance, how can I make them understand? Rather than thinking, oh, this is so easy for me. Why are they still so silly? You know, and that's why when we try to share the Buddha's teaching with our friends or our family members, that's something that we need to always reflect on. How the Buddha, such a noble person, a great teacher who is so wise, he still tried to go down to our level and give us many different teachings. And that's why for beginners, he told them about the virtues of the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha. He told them about the five precepts. And then for those who are a bit more advanced, he told them about impermanence, what everything arises due to causes and conditions. For those who, besides purify themselves, have keen in purifying themselves, he started to tell them that they need to have this great compassion and loving kindness for others as well, and guiding them into another level. So you can see that the Buddha, we say the Buddha expounded many, many teachings. And that's why the Buddha's teaching, when we look at the Buddhist canon, the Tripitaka that we have, there are abundant of information in there. He didn't just say talk about one sutra. All the sutra are discourses of the Buddha. Sutra are basically talks given by the Buddha and it was compiled. And so you can see that how many talks that the Buddha has given, and a lot were compiled as well. Those compiled in the Tripitaka probably are just the essence of it. And you can see that when he teaches, so that's why all the different sutra, they are basically tailored to the audience at that time. And that's why when you read the sutra, it is very important for you to know, okay, where did the Buddha talk about this sutra? Who were the audience? Because it's just like when I'm speaking today, okay, I'm speaking to all of you who are the young people. So I try to give example that you young people can understand. If I'm talking to a group of the 70s, 80s old people, then I will have to give examples or the life experience. They are more... They can relate more. So same thing when the Buddha teach. So he teach according to the acceptance levels of the people and try to guide everyone according to their standard. So if they are a beginner, he tell them about the five precepts. If they are a bit more advanced, he tell them about the eight precepts. If they are higher, have a greater mind, then he tell them about the Bodhisattva precepts. So there are different levels of guiding them. And that shows the great compassion of the Buddha. He didn't just teach everything at the university level. Then those who are at the kindergarten level can never try to reach that. He creates steps for us. He creates steps for us from junior to senior, from the infant class, and then slowly back. So that shows his great compassion and his skillful means in helping and guiding sentient beings. And this has to be backed by his great compassion and loving kindness. And not only that he tried to teach, give us a lot of teaching after he attained enlightenment, he also formed the Sangha order for people who, after listening to the Buddha's teaching, they want to devote their life in learning the Buddha's teaching. The Buddha grouped them in and formed a Sangha order and set some rules and regulations for the Sangha members to live in harmony so that they make sure that they don't allow their behavior to disturb other practitioners who are staying in the community. At the same time, do not allow their own behavior to create obstacle to their own self. So precepts that the Buddha set, especially for the Sangha order, you find that you can categorize them into a few sections. For one section, of course, are those unwholesome deeds that we need to avoid. Another section will be those actions or behavior that may bring disturbance to others. So in order to maintain the harmony of a community, it is very important for us to have consideration for others. For example, when don't bang the door, don't walk loudly, or things like that. So small things as such, not necessarily sinful things, but when you are living in a community, you need to be considerate for others. And that's why you find that to reduce our self-centeredness, living in a community, working together in a community, is actually a good opportunity for us to reduce our self-centeredness. We have to learn to be considerate. If you are living by yourself, in a unit, in a flat, yourself, you go home, you bang the door, you chuck your slippers here, one there, and then your shirts and your laundry pile up, no one cares. But if you're living with others, especially the sink in the kitchen, if your coffee cup, one cup, two cups, and you never wash, if you have flatmates, then they will get very upset. You have to be considerate the other people are using, right? Toilets as well. If you are by yourself, if you don't clean the toilet, it's up to you, it's you yourself. But if you have other people living with you, then you have to then understand that there are someone else who are going to use it. Don't allow your own action, your selfish action or your lazy action to bring disturbance or unhappiness to others. A consideration, and that's actually a good way to reduce our self-centeredness. And so the precepts that the Buddha set for the Sangha order, one are those things that we should not do, because if you are carried away by you are carried away by your desire. So the things that we should not do are similar to the five precepts, but they are elaborated into more refined items. And then there are also a section where basically behavior that we should not do so that we don't bring disturbance to others. And then the third section will be a procedure of doing things. In a community, it is important to have a standard way of solving problem. When there's dispute, how to solve problem in the right way. The meeting procedure so that things are solved in a proper procedure, and then so that we maintain the harmony of the Sangha order. So the Buddha formed the Sangha order so that the Sangha order can maintain an environment, a learning environment which is conducive, which is in line with the Buddha's teaching, which is peaceful, harmonious, and happy. And so that the practitioner in the Sangha order can practice happily and be able to prolong the right teachings of the Buddha. And the reason why he wanted the teachings to be prolonged is so that people, generation after generation, can continue to learn the teaching and benefit from the teaching. And that's why up to today, we still have the teachings to learn. And that shows the compassion and the wisdom of the Buddha. That 2,600 years ago, he understand that in order for the teachings to prolong, it is important to have a community that follows the right teaching, guided by some guidelines, so that they are, because if you don't have the Buddha didn't set any guidelines, then everyone will just use their own way of thinking and say, okay, we change this rule. You find that it will be like the Chinese whisper. After 100 years, 200 years, you find that the rules will become very different. And that happens to some religion as well, where they are allowed to change their rules. You find that if you compare to the original version, it's very, very different. Because as ordinary person, sometimes you may think, oh, this is, we are now in the 21st century, and so therefore this probably is not in line with our modern society. We change this. At the end, you're going to change everything. But we have to understand that we are ordinary person with afflictions, with greed, hatred, anger, jealousy, arrogance, selfishness, self-centeredness. when we change, we tend to think from our perspective and may not be in line with the truth. Whereas when the Buddha said, he set the rules for the sake of us so that we can continue to maintain the purity of the community. At the same time, those rules are rules that help us to reflect on our afflictions so that we are not too carried away by our desire and afflictions that's going to bring disturbance to ourselves. So that's why you find that some organization, for example, the constitution, if you find that if the constitution are being changed one after another, so it's like, for example, some company or some organization, everyone says, okay, we changed this. We changed this. So it depends on the batch of the people, and they keep changing. At the end, the whole thing is going to be gone. Unless you got people with the right understanding guiding it. And that's why it is very important. And so the formation of Sangha order also shows the great compassion of the Buddha, how he hopes that people generations later, like us, who are 2,600 years after the Buddha, can still have the opportunity to listen to the teaching. And that shows the great compassion of the Buddha and the wisdom of the Buddha. So that's why we say, without the Buddha's loving kindness and compassion, we wouldn't have Buddhism today. And that's why while we try to learn the Buddha's teaching, or we want to learn the example of the Buddha, we really need to think about this: how the Buddha shared the feelings of those creatures killing each other, how the Buddha shared the feelings of the old people, the aged people, the sick people, and how he shared the frustration of all sentient beings, and that finally he found the truth and tried to help us to solve problems in life. And not only that, after he attained enlightenment, he tried to keep sharing with us the teaching, and that also shows his great compassion. Otherwise, he can just enter Nirvana and not proactively sharing the teaching. But he takes the toil and trouble and tries to share the teachings. That shows his great compassion. So therefore, while we try to learn from the Buddha, we need to understand that this loving kindness and compassion of sharing the feelings of others is a very important practice, because ultimately the main cause of our suffering comes from our self-centeredness. If we can learn to share the feelings of others and have this wish that we want to help others to relieve from suffering, do not allow our action to impose suffering on others, wishing others well, you'll find that at least this self-centeredness will be able to be reduced. Okay. So, however, some people still feel that it's so difficult for them to develop this sharing the feelings of others. As we say, the best way to practice a loving kindness and compassion is to share the feelings of others. But some people feel that, I just can't. There are people who I'm not sure if you have any friends who say we have to be kind to others. Why do we need to be kind to others? They just can't develop this sense of like wishing other well. Why do I need to wish other well? There are people, but probably not all of you here, because at least you have been listening to the talks. But if you go out of this door, you find that there are some people, when you tell them to share the feelings of others, they say, "Why? Who cares?" So, why should we have loving kindness and compassion to others? How can you convince or try to encourage your friends to have a bit more consideration, loving kindness, and compassion to others?
It comes back to ourselves, like it's causing us suffering to feel that negative feelings towards others, and like, okay, don't worry about them, but like, how, like, how do you feel with the, all that negative, like, do you feel good having that?
Yeah, for some people, maybe that's a good way, that if you don't wish other will, and that you hold a lot of unhappiness in yourself, you are not a happy person yourself.
Yeah.
Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yes, some people, they tend to think about others in a negative way all the time. So just tell the person, why don't you change your mind around and wish other will, then you feel yourself a happier person. If you always like, I do not like this person, I do not like this person, I hate this person, you yourself are not a happy person. You have a lot of grudge in yourself. And so, of course, this is not, this is a good way for some people who have a very negative feeling. But of course, if we want to practice a step further, then we don't just think of, oh, because I don't want to have bad karma for myself, so therefore I need to wish other well. That's still not the ultimate way, but it's a good start for some people, especially people who tend to have anger management problem, who have a grouch, and who tends to think about others in a negative way all the time. Then we try to tune their mind around and say, why don't you just wish other well and wish other happy, rather than looking at this person, I'm angry. Looking at this person, I'm angry. Then you're not angry, you're not a happy person at all, right? So it's a good start for some of these people. So what else? How can we encourage others? How do you explain to others that we actually should have some we should develop loving kindness and compassion to others.
It's to show by your own, starting from your action, like when you're like doing good things, then they can just like see it and how it's done. It might influence them.
Very good. So your own example on how, for example, how other people has not been very nice to you, but you are very patient and you still treat them well, and how maybe the friends start to feel sorry about that and start to become good friends to you. And if the third party saw that, they realize how it actually works, that's a very good way of encouraging people that kindness is the best way to solve problem. As we say, if you're angry and we try to fight back with anger, it's not going to solve problem. It is with kindness that problem can be solved. And we can also explain to them that, in fact, yes, we think that we, why do we need to share the feelings of others? But think about our life. We, in fact, rely on a lot of people. We always think that, why do I want to care about others? But you can't not care about others. Looking at whatever you have on your body, right? Your watch, your haircut, your glasses, your jumper, your food, your drinks, the chair that you're sitting, the table that you're using. There's so many people involved. Allows you to have all these things. Otherwise, you're going to make all this yourself. You have to be a carpenter, you have to be a hairdresser, you have to be a tailor, you have to be everything. So other people have to make life convenient for you. Well, you may say, oh, I pay them. But even if you pay them, you have to make sure that they want to sell it to you. You know, sometimes you got a lot of money, people don't want to sell it to you. It doesn't mean that it works, right? So even if you pay and the person is willing to exchange with you, you still have to have a sense of appreciation to others. So we have to understand that our life relies on a lot of people's support. Especially for this day, you find that whatever information that we need, anything that you don't understand, you just Google. There are a lot of information in there. a lot of work. You think about, like, sometimes you yourself write something and put onto the web or onto the net to share with others. You spend a few days writing an articles or things like that, good articles you want to put it up. And so if you look at the Google, anything that you search and it just pop out, how many people's works are there? And they give us a lot of convenience. We need to be thankful as well. So that's why, think about it, that in fact, everyone living in the society, in the world, somehow are interrelated to us. We are interdependent one another to create this society that we are in. And so if we only care about ourselves and not to care about everyone in the society and in fact can't rejoice with the good deeds of others and always think that other people are bad or full of afflictions, then in fact our society is not going to be a happy society. Because if you think about, we are all interdependent. We create this society together with our collective karma. Do you understand what is collective karma? It's our collective action, our collective behavior that create this society that we are in. For example, like UNSW, right? So the students here follow some basic rules so that this university can run peacefully. If there are no basic rules, the students just like to behave themselves in the way they like and they destroy everything, then this university will be in chaos. The same thing in the school. School will have some basic school rules that everyone in the school follow the school rules, have respect to the teacher, study in the class, and not create too much problem. But if you go to a school where the students are not following the rules at all and create a lot of disturbance, then you find that the collective atmosphere of that school will be chaos and scary. Well, I heard from some teachers who go to school, which is very, very wild, where basically in the science lab, the students play with the Bunsen burner, stand on the table, play with the fan. And during the class, they want to run out. The teacher said, no, you can't go out. They say, I jump out from the window. If you go to a school as such, it's going to be terrible. And if the school can't control the students and the majority of the students in that school are as such, then collectively going to create a school which is chaos and terrifying. But if you go to a school where all students are respectful to one another, very considerate, hardworking, and well-mannered, then you find that collectively it creates a school where the atmosphere is very conducive for us to study. Same thing with our society. We collectively create our society. So if we wish that our society is peaceful, then we should wish that everyone around us can be peaceful as well and have less affliction. Because if everyone in this society have less affliction, our society will be more peaceful. It's not relying on ourselves alone that we can create a society. So if we thought we want to purify ourselves, but we hate others and don't care about others and let others have their affliction just grow, become stronger in their greed, anger, hatred, and just care about ourselves only, then our society, if the collective effort, if the majority of the people are full of hatred, anger, hatred, and arrogance and so on, then the society will be full of afflictions, which full of fighting and peace rather than peacefulness. So that's why, think about it, we are all interdependent on one another. We need to appreciate the kindness of others in helping our life and have a sense of gratitude to others. And then at the same time, that we should wish everyone to be well because they have been helping us in one way or another. It's just like the people that we know that have helped us, then we always wish them well. But as I say right in the beginning, our mind of wishing others well, how strong it is. You know, sometimes we write, like, you may be passing around a happy birthday card sign. You just sign happy birthday. When you write, sign happy birthday, are you sincerely wishing other people have a happy day? I read a news just a report the other day that in a company, there's someone passing around a card, a condolence card. And then someone wrote the happy birthday. That just shows how when we sign things, sometimes we don't actually have our mind in there, especially something that has become so written, like someone has an incident in the or happy birthday, so you just pass around a card and it's, oh, another card come, or this few weeks there are a lot of graduation, and then so another graduation, so you don't even look at what was it for, and maybe it's a graduation why you write happy birthday. And that shows when we our wish, sometimes we are not that sincere in our wishing. So this mind of loving kindness, we need to make sure that it is a bit more sincere. All right? So we have to understand that we are interdependent on one another. So have good sense of appreciation for the kindness of others, and always like to show our gratitude in repaying the others' kindness. In that way, you find that your loving kindness and compassion will grow. And then secondly is that we have to also understand that we sometimes may be thinking that, okay, I can have loving kindness and compassion to people who took nice people have been helping me, but I can't have this loving kindness and compassion to people whom I think that have hurt me, or people who have done things that I do not like. That's something that is difficult to break through sometimes. But then, if we can understand that, firstly, is that although the person have hurt us, or the person have done something that we dislike, but if you are able to look at the incident as an experience, then it may help you to grow. So the incident, sometimes, it's not just all the praise and things like that are good. Sometimes some criticism, some obstacle, some setback are actually good challenge for us to grow, to counteract our own affliction, our own weakness, that we can grow. And therefore, maybe at that time, when someone did something that make you feel hurt, or partly is our ego, but if we can relate to the teachings and learn to calm down ourselves and look at the incident and reflect and see, yes, there are certain points that this person say was actually right, that I can rectify myself. If you can calm down yourself and see the point that you need to improve yourself, then you probably will improve. And in that way, you have to be thankful to the other party. You see? So sometimes a good and people who are nice to us, it is easier for us to have loving kindness and compassion to them. But then for people whom we feel that they have been creating trouble to us, we sometimes feel difficult to have compassion to them or loving kindness to them. But then we have to understand that if we can take that as an experience, then they are also a wise advisor to help us grow. On the other hand, as we know that everyone can change. So we have to understand that this person may look like this person is a bad person, or a person who is a bit more nasty at this moment, but everyone can change. Just like now, we may think that I'm better than you, but who knows, 5 years later, you are better than me. And that's why we don't want to hold grudge or look down on others, but we should try to treat everyone equally. Okay? So, and then if we can also extend this loving kindness and compassion not only to our family members, people that we know, and just now we say even people that we may slightly dislike, we have to understand that everyone can change, and all incident or any all circumstances that we encounter, if we make use of them in the right way, they can all become a good experience for ourselves to improve ourselves. then in fact we should be thankful to everyone. And if we extend further to past, present and future, as we say, before we attain enlightenment, we all crave for continuous existence, we'll be reborn again and again. So within the cycle of life and death, in fact, there have been a lot of sentient beings who have been our family members, who have been related to us one way or another. So for couples of life that we have gone around the cycle of life and death, if you think about it, today we are able to sit down here together and listen to Dharma. We all have good links together. We have very strong affinity so that we are able to sit here and listen to the Dharma together. So therefore, for all people in the society, the thousand kapas of life that we have been transmigrating in the cycle of life and death, we have to understand that they could be our relatives and friends before. So since they have been our relatives and friends, if you think about everyone has been my relatives and friends, so I wish them well then, right? So that's how you extend your loving kindness and compassion, not only to your family members, to your friends, to your teachers, even to those that you dislike, and even to everyone who is neutral. Alright? So that's how we can slowly develop our loving kindness and compassion. So this mind of loving kindness and compassion can be practiced in meditation. That's a meditation we call meditation on loving kindness and compassion, where we try to cultivate kindness in ourselves and always maintain a mind of wishing other well. Okay, so you have done some meditation on loving kindness and compassion before? You have a workshop before? We'll just see if we have the last few minutes afterwards. So that's the mind of loving kindness and compassion. But just having the mind is not good enough. We need to transform into act. You can't just say, "Oh, I wish you well," but then no action. So the next step. So the mind, when we talk about loving kindness and compassion, the mind of loving kindness and compassion, from the mind of loving kindness and compassion, we want to transform it into action. That's another step in our practice, because sometimes it's easy when you sit down meditating. May all be well and happy. It's easy because you're not confronting the person. But if the person that you dislike is standing in front of you, and we say, sometimes even verbally say, "I wish you well," or "congratulations," you find it. Why do I need to say congratulations to him? Why do I need to say congratulations to her? You find that. Even, but when you do meditation, you close your eyes, the person is not in front of you, you can wish. But when the person is right in front of you, you find that you need to break through. And that's a challenge. And that's an act that you need to break through. And that's why we said, from having a mind, but at least develop a mind of wishing other well, make our mind a gentle mind, a mind which is more kind, is a good start, but then we need to transform it into further into action. So the act of loving kindness and compassion can be expressed through generosity. For example, you wish other well. Okay, someone is in poverty. You say, "Oh, I wish that they can be free from suffering. They can be free from poverty." That's easy to say. Can you take out some money and give it to them? Then you say, "No." You see, then you start to have a lot of excuses. "But I don't have money. I can just wish." So that's not good enough, right? So if you feel that, "Oh, I feel that this person is in such a difficult situation. Maybe the weather's getting cold. Maybe I can go and look up for my some old jumper or things like that." So you transform into action, that you really take an action to look for something to go and help the person. So generosity, that shows your heart. You know, it's just like when you say, "Mom, I love you." And your mom said, if you love me, don't play games. They said, no, I can't, but I love you. So your mom may say, if you want to really show your love and respect me, then listen to what I say. Right? Is that so? You can see that when you say, like, I love you, it's easy. But to transform and say, okay, if you really love me and you respect me on this Mother's Day, don't play games. To basically use your action to show your respect to me. And if you say no, that means your love and respect is actually discounted. Does it make sense? So that's why the mind and the act transform into action. So generosity can be generosity in giving material things, generosity in sharing teachings. So for example, your friends say, oh, I'm so stressed because I can't understand what the lecturer is saying. Or you say, oh, study harder, that will be all right. Can you spare a bit of time, sit down if you understand, sit down and spare a bit of your time and help to explain again to your friend? So sometimes this need another level of effort as well, because you feel like, oh, if I help you, I wouldn't have enough time for my own study. See, sacrificing your own time and help your friend so that the friend can be relieved from suffering because he's already overstressed and nearly at the blink of nervous breakdown. And you just say, I'll just study harder, it'll be okay. But you don't even want to sit beside the person and help the and sort of give a bit of guidance to the person while you have the ability. Of course, if you don't have the ability, then maybe you can try to help, try to look for other people to help, right? So that shows sometimes we need to sacrifice our time. But a lot of time we say, oh, if I help him or her, I wouldn't have the time to for my own study. We it's our self benefit that say, oh, I cannot help. So, but if you really have great compassion, then you don't care about yourself. You don't think about yourself that much. You will readjust your time, cut down some of your unnecessary activities, and you go and help your friend. So that's sharing of teachings, and also sharing of generosity in terms of helping others to be free from fear, anxiety. So that is giving comfort and encouragement. So sometimes, as we say just then, is to help the person in the study. Sometimes some needs more support and encouragement. So if you can give them some support and encouragement so that people are not in fear, people can be more positive with themselves. So sometimes your friends become depressed, they need someone to talk to them. So they didn't do well in the last test, tomorrow there's another test, they find that they can't study anymore because they start to feel depressed, they start to get very, very worried about tomorrow's test. So you probably need to sit beside the person and tell them, talk to them and encourage them. So that's a kind of generosity as well. So generosity is not just generosity of money and material things, but it can be generosity in sharing teachings, generosity in giving courage, encouragement, and comfort, allow people to be free from fear. So so especially for someone who wants to help others, to wish others to practice the mind of loving kindness and compassion, we want to make sure that we help others to be free from fear and give them courage, encourage and comfort. We also want to make sure that we do not allow our actions to bring fear to others. Because we talk about act of loving kindness and compassion, we tend to say, oh, we try to help them to relieve from suffering. But make sure that your action don't impose suffering onto others. And that's why when the Buddha set the precepts, the principle behind the precepts is actually loving kindness and compassion. He said, do not kill, because all living beings love their life. So when you kill, it's basically like you threaten others' life. And that's why do not kill. So that is actually out of loving kindness and compassion, because we say loving kindness is to wish other well. And compassion means to relieve others from suffering. Now, if you yourself take the action of killing, you are imposing suffering on others. You are not practicing compassion of relieving other people from suffering. And so that's totally against the teachings. Right? So no stealing, the same thing. Do not steal, because everyone loves their property, and the property are external. We sometimes call it the external life. This is internal life. The things that support us are called external life. And so when you take away the external life, it will affect the internal life as well. Some people, because of their things being stolen, they become so depressed, at the end they become sick, they can't work, and then they die. And that can happen as well, right? So again, it's out of compassion. So no adultery, it's the same thing. Out of our loving kindness and compassion. Don't allow your selfish desire to bring harm to other people's family. That's adultery, means extramarital affair. Bring harm to your own family, bring harm to other people's family, just because of your own selfish desire. It's not right. Okay? So no lying and no intoxicants. Again, so all these are basically out of loving kindness and compassion. Why do we want to tell lies? Sometimes I always feel that if we can live in a society where we can trust one another, it will be so easy. You do not need to worry about people cheating you. We trust one another. So when you get someone to come to work in your house, a plumber or whatever, carpenter, they will do their work properly, and you trust that they will do their work properly. You do not need to keep an eye and seeing if they are trying to find an easy way out or not doing things properly. If everyone can trust one another, it's so easy. But the problem with the society they were in is that everyone, the trust is not there. And then no intoxicants, basically to make sure that we don't get carried away by these intoxicating substances, that then will lead to our wrong speech, actions, and thought that's going to bring harm to others and ourselves. So generosity is an act of loving kindness and compassion, and then to transform our loving kindness and compassion into act, besides practicing generosity, the other very important thing is the speech. So just now we did talk about speech, all right? Speech. So say words that's positive, that's encouraging, that make people feel comfortable, happy, and cheerful. So that's loving speech, and then beneficial act. So always have this, whatever you're doing, always think of, how can I benefit others? So this is especially for the bodhisattva practice, that whatever we do, a lot of time when we do something, what benefit do I have? But when a bodhisattva carry out an act, he or she will be thinking, how can I make sure that this act help others? How can I make sure that this act benefit others? So it's just like when you organize the Bodhi Night, you don't just think of how do we want to organize the Bodhi Night. Of course, you think of how you want to organize Bodhi Night, but then you also have to think how we want the Bodhi Night to benefit the audience. Then when you are preparing your Bodhi Night, whether it's the reception, whether it's the technician, whether it's the sketch, you'll be thinking, how would the you would put yourself into what's going to happen on that day when audience come? The first thing, they come into the foyer, the reception. How can I make everyone who comes in feel welcoming, entertaining, at the same time I have some Dharma message for them or whatever it is. So you will be thinking how you can make everyone happy, rather than thinking, okay, I think I want to put a table here, I want to, and never think about the audience who is going to come in, how would they feel? You understand what I'm saying? So you have to put yourself into how you want to bring happiness to others. So that's beneficial act. And fourthly, the act of loving kindness and compassion is to always work together with others. So it is by working together with others that you share the feelings of others, the difficulties in the tasks that they are doing, the challenges that they have, and so you can be more understanding. And so this four act is sometimes called the four embracing virtues, are the four ways that we transform our mind of loving kindness and compassion into action in guiding and helping others. So that's generosity, loving speech, beneficial act, and working together. And so that's the loving kindness and compassion. So if the loving kindness and compassion, if you extend it further, you'll become the four immeasurables. That is loving kindness and compassion. At the same time, if we have all this, we have this strong loving kindness and compassion in wishing others well, and be free from suffering. Then whenever we see other people are successful, people are doing good deeds, we will rejoice with them. If we can't rejoice with them, then it basically shows that your loving kindness and compassion is not thorough. Because if you wish others well and other people are doing well, you should feel happy for them. If other people are doing well and you start to feel jealous, but on the other hand you say, I wish you well and happy, then it shows that it's not thorough. And that's why we say that the broader scope of loving kindness and compassion is a four immeasurable. That is loving kindness is one, compassion is number two, appreciative joy, that's rejoice with the success and happiness of others. And then fourthly is the mind of equanimity, that you're not just feel happy because your siblings are doing well, but whoever is doing well, whoever can be free from suffering, you feel happy for them, and your wish is equally your wish is equal to everyone as well. Okay, so loving kindness and compassion is a powerful tool that helps us to overcome our anger and hatred, and it reduces suffering for ourselves and others. So that's why the practice of loving kindness and compassion is very important. And loving kindness and compassion is also the foundation for the development of great body mind. That how we can develop this great compassion, just like the Buddha. And it is by developing this great compassion that we overcome our self-centeredness, we overcome our own anger and hatred, and do carry out all these good deeds of generosity, loving speech, beneficial act, and working, guiding others to work together, and that's how we finally can attain Buddhahood. And the other thing very important is that loving kindness and compassion has to be practiced together with wisdom. Yeah, if we don't practice together with wisdom, then you find that sometimes you carry out loving kindness and compassion just with the thought of, we need to wish other well. But then sometimes you will encounter obstacle, and also sometimes you may have situation that you may say, should I be compassionate about this case? Like, for example, someone is taking drugs, is in pain, and they want you to give them drug. Are you going to give them? You need to have some wisdom. And at the same time, when we practice loving kindness and compassion, we also want to make sure that our ego don't grow. Because sometimes you may start with practicing loving kindness and compassion, sharing, and then people start to praise you. Oh, you're such a good person, you're such a good person. And you start to think that, yes, I'm such a good person. And your arrogance will grow. And when your arrogance grow, then your friends are doing good deeds as well, and people start to praise them, you start to feel angry. And there are a lot of people who contribute themselves to the charitable organization doing good deeds. Sometimes at the end, if they are not coupled with wisdom, they may start to have a lot of conflicts, a lot of unhappiness among their peers because of the jealousy, arrogance that's playing out. And that's why it is important for loving kindness and compassion to be practiced together with wisdom in order to finally become perfection. Okay? All right, I think we'll stop here today. Is there any question that anyone would like to ask? Yes?
How does Buddhism look at euthanasia of animals?
Right, euthanasia. Now, it's a question, I think someone was asking that, wanted to ask that yesterday. Now, we may think that the person is in suffering and the person wants to end their life.
And animals.
Yes. A lot of time when we there are a few considerations that we need to take into. So first, let's talk about human being. All right, human being. They may say, okay, I'm in great pain, terminal illness. I like to die. And so they like to die in a peaceful way. But we have to also understand that as long as we are not enlightened, we deep in our mind, we still love ourselves a lot. And that's why you find that there are a lot of people who commit suicide. They feel that life cannot be endured and they want to kill themselves. And halfway through the killing themselves, they say, save me, I don't want to die. And that can happen. And so, for euthanasia, you find that can happen as well, because like, you sign the paper, you say, okay, I want to die. And so the doctor will need to do a lot of checking, a lot of research, and then finally whether to approve or not. It takes months. And then by then, in between, sometimes you change your mind. And even last minute, you may change your mind. So in Buddhism, we don't encourage this because this is considered a kind of killing. Because the Buddha basically says that committing suicide is a kind of killing. And you are a sentient being. You are basically actually killing yourself. And now, when you say, I can't stand this, I want to die, there's a strong self there. If you are enlightened, that's why during Buddha's time, I'm not sure you heard of this story, the Buddha first teach meditation and he also teach some people who have strong desire. The Buddha taught them the contemplation on impurity. That's to contemplate that this body is impure. Look at our body. We love our body so much. So especially those who have strong desire to themselves, strong sexual desire, the Buddha asked them to contemplate that you love this body so much, but how pure is this body? Look at your tears, your saliva, all this fruit in your body, your intestine. If you think about them, part in every organ you take it out, they are not that nice at all. So this body is not as pure as what you thought. We go to toilet, you have to take shower. If 3 days you don't take shower, no one likes to sit besides you. So we are not as pure as what we thought. So the Buddha teach them meditation on contemplation on impurity. So there were some monks, after contemplating on impurity, they realized that this body is disgusting. And so they feel like, oh, I hate this body, I do not like this body. And they decided that this body is the cause of suffering. And so they want to kill themselves. And they actually kill themselves. And so it says in the sutra that the monks go to the Buddha every now and then to listen to the Buddha's teaching. And so the Buddha said, how come the monks become less now? So it was Ananda who says that, a lot of monks kill themselves. because they say this body is impermanent, it's impure anyway. So the Buddha then tell them, this is not the right thing to do. Because when you say, I hate this body, in other words, you still attach to this body. You still think of this body as a fixed entity, and that's why you hate this body. If you penetrate the truth and know that it's impermanent, there's nothing that you can cling on, it is just causes and conditions, why do you need to hate it? But they are also, for these monks who have not attained enlightenment and killed themselves, the Buddha actually condemned them and said, this is wrong and this is actually an act of killing. But there are monks who have attained enlightenment and they decided to enter Nirvana and just not to return to the world. And so for those, the Buddha then didn't say that it is a killing, because to them, they have realized non-self. So when it's non-self, who has been killed? No one has been killed. They have breakthrough. They have understand that this body and mind is a combination of causes and conditions. There's nothing that they can cling on to. And so they actually, in their meditation, use the fire of samadhi, they actually burn themselves. And this kind of letting go, or this kind of killing themselves, the person who killed themselves are at peace and at ease. Because they know that there's nothing being killed. They have attained enlightenment. They understand non-self, and so they're just like burning the extra clothes, just burn it away. So they don't have that attachment. And for these people, the Buddha didn't say anything. But then the Buddha, so that's why from then on, the Buddha didn't teach so much on the contemplation of impurity anymore, but teach on meditation, highlight on meditation on breathing. Because the contemplation of impurity is the counteract problem. But then these monks who did not understand the teaching, didn't master the Buddha's teachings well enough, start to think that this body is impure and disgusting, and they kill themselves. And that's why people who commit suicide, people who want to go to internecia, basically knows that this body is they feel that I don't want to enjoy this pain. Is this concept of I is still there, and that's why they are not enlightened. And that's why in cases like this, the best is basically to tell them teaching. Just don't keep thinking about your body, the pain and things like that, but try to think about how we can have a more peaceful mind in thinking about the Buddha's teaching, the virtues of the Buddha, and just make sure that our mind is always with the Buddha. This body, just let it be. Whenever it wants to go, let it go. So that's cultivating the mind. And that's why I like the Buddha. The Buddha always says, we all will confront old age, sickness, and death. All right? So when old age comes or sickness comes, it's something that as long as we are ordinary person in the world, we can't avoid it. It's just like one arrow it should have shot on us. We got pain. But whether our mind wants to feel painful or not, that's something that we can master. I think I've told you this parable before. The Buddha in the sutra says, if when we are sick, it's just like we are shot by one arrow. You already feel pain. If you start to feel, oh, I'm sick, I think I'm going to die, I feel so depressed, oh, no one come and visit me, and everyone is so cruel, but now I'm sick, no one cares about me, you start to have more pain. It's just like you're taking another arrow and shot on yourself. So the Buddha said, you're already shot by one arrow, and this arrow is a natural arrow where sickness, old age comes to everyone. It's something that difficult for us to avoid. But the other arrow is something that we can master. It's in your hand. Don't take the arrow and shoot on yourself. You know that you are sick. Okay, just know that you are sick. contemplate about this sickness. Where does the sickness come from? How come my body can get sick? I was healthy yesterday. Why today virus can get in? Oh, it's causes and conditions. And that's why the virus can get in. And it is impermanent. It allows you to learn about the teaching. So, the Buddha's teachings in guiding us or in confronting sickness, illness, is that to make sure that we do not allow our physical illness to lead to mental illness. And to strengthen our mental, the positiveness of our mental energy, and it is by having a positive mental energy that we can reduce our physical pain. And if your mental energy is strong, your positiveness is strong, sometimes you can even overcome the physical illness. Does it make sense? And that's how the Buddha teaches. Okay? Not okay.
You haven't talked about animals.
Yes. Animals, euthanasia is due to our human beings' selfishness. Because human beings don't want to take care of it anymore. It costs too much to take care of them. So from economical point of view, you just kill them. So that's not the right way. In fact, animals live their life as well. So since we want to rear the animals, we need to make sure that we take care of it. So it's just like a lot of incident in the hospital as well. Sometimes even like in organ transplant or things like that, a person is not, because this day the medical science basically declares someone's dead when they are brain dead, but their heart is still pumping, they're still breathing. You start to operate them and take away their organ. Because you say someone, a young person, needs their organ. A young person is more important than this old person, this person who is injured. And so basically it's us who decide for the value of these two lives. But in reality, both persons love their lives equally. We should not say, oh, this person is just occupying a bed, and so therefore we need to make sure that we deal with this first so that we have an empty bed for another patient who is more important to come in. In fact, all patients are equally important. But we tend to have our judgment, this is young person, we need to help them more. This is the old person, how long can the person live? Maybe 2 more years? Don't worry. That's not right. Because whether it's an old person, a young person, we all equally live our life. And therefore we need to treat the life equally.
Yes. So you can apply this to a sick animal as well?
Yes. Okay. Any other question? No? All right. We'll stop here today then. Thank you.